Thanks for having me, guys. Can I do that? Is that allowed? I don't like those things. Here we go. Well, thanks for having me, everyone. My name's Sarah, and I've been a member of GVC since I moved into this area at the end of last year, so I still feel quite new. And as many of you know, we're having our stripped-back Sunday services all through August, so instead of a regular preach today, Daniel and Emily have asked a bunch of people to share their personal testimonies, and you've got me today, so... Buckle up. So I was quite fortunate in that I grew up knowing Jesus. My parents were missionaries when I was very little, and I had a very active prayer life from a young age. I actually used to have dreams about Jesus. We would like go puddle jumping and go for walks in the forest and stuff like that. I'm originally from South Africa. We've got a picture of me as a little baby. My folks were missionaries in KwaZulu-Natal, so I was colloquially known as the white Zulu baby. Yeah, I'll let you guess which one was me. Zulu baby with white skin and blue eyes was quite a thing. But we ended up moving around quite a lot, and in 2001 we ended up settling in Adelaide, Australia, and that was my 9th move by the age of 9. So quite a disruptive early childhood, to say the least. And as I said, I was extremely fortunate to always have a relationship with Jesus. But I know I'm not the only one in that home life was quite chaotic and turbulent. And I grew up to become quite a bitter and broken, angry teenager. My mental health deteriorated quite badly, and I did not do well in school. And then when I was 17 years old, I was basically not coping well with life at all, and things at home were really, really messy. So eventually my aunt and uncle in the UK offered to fly me out to go live with them in London. So we've got a little next slide. Basically, I finished year 12 at school in Adelaide, Australia, and moved to London while I was still a minor. I'm not sure if that was legal, but we did it. And I had absolutely no idea what my life was going to look like. It was a huge step into the unknown. I was leaving behind my parents, my school friends, my boyfriend, and everything that I was familiar with. And I was reminded of when God called Abraham in Genesis 12, when he says... to go from your country, your people, and your father's house to a land that I will show you. Abraham had absolutely no idea what he was getting himself into, and likewise, I just had no clue what my life was going to look like. And I just remember on the plane, I was feeling really, really anxious and just trying to like center myself and talk to God about it. And I just remember him asking me a very, very simple question, and this became the defining question of my life, which was, Sarah, will you trust me? So I settled in London. We can go to the next slide. I got plugged into a big, shiny mega church, which was very cool. I got a job. I made some friends. Here's the evidence. I promise I have friends. after a year, I left my aunt and uncle and moved into a Christian house share, which was fantastic. Still in touch with a lot of those people. And then next slide. This is one of the places where I worked. So I was in the hospitality industry. So very bougie. Started off as a waitress and then rose into some managerial positions quite quickly. I worked for a company that did catering for some of the major art galleries in London. So we would do lunch, afternoon tea, dinner services, and then we also did exclusive events for the wealthy elite inside the galleries. So met board members of very large corporations that would sponsor art shows, so lots of bankers and oil company people. And that actually massively shaped my worldview because I was surrounded by very extreme wealth, often old money, and I had nothing. But I very quickly realized that I had no interest in what was valuable to them because I could see firsthand what that kind of power does to people. And when you work in service, you can see who people really are based on how they treat you. When you're nothing in the eyes of the world, you can tell what their character is like. And after a few years of working in this industry, I started having some very weird recurring dreams about going to New York in America. And I would just have the same dream of wandering around New York taking photographs, mostly Manhattan. I was pretty safe and secure in this lovely job that I quite liked, but in my prayer time, I just couldn't let go of the fact that I kept on having these dreams, and I felt like the Lord was stirring me to go to the US. Very long story cut short, I pushed on a few different doors and eventually ended up getting a bursary to go to photography school at the New York Film Academy for a summer school. And I had to pray for literally everything, for finances, for the flight, for living costs, for accommodation, visa. Like, every little thing was, like, a big stress. And it was all very scary. But again, just felt really strongly like the Lord each time was saying, Sarah, do you trust me? And he waited till the very last minute, but he did provide me with everything I needed. We can go to the next slide. I did have some savings, but a big game changer was when my friend's friend's parents put me up in their loft for free for the whole summer, which was exceptionally generous of them. It was a stunning Filipino family living in Staten Island. So I used to commute every day. This was my, oh no, previous photo. There's another one. Yeah, Statue of Liberty, there we go. So that was my commute every day on the Staten Island ferry all through summer, so going from Staten Island to downtown Manhattan. So yeah, poor me. It was pretty amazing. We can go to the next slide now if you want. So that's just to prove that I did go to photography school. That's a self-portrait. The brief was that we had to do a self-portrait based on how your family sees you, so I thought I'd dress up as the Mad Hatter. I thought I was really clever. Anyway, looking back, I was worshipping at this mega church in New York that was connected to the mega church I was part of in London. And during that time there, I just started to feel very spiritually dry and just had this sense that God had more for me, but I didn't know what it was. And nobody else could seem to kind of articulate that either. And with hindsight, I can absolutely say that that church I was part of was not a church, it was a franchise. And most people in that movement, including myself, especially myself, were enjoying a very consumerist vision of Christianity. And we really didn't have any understanding of like the gospel. And I kind of just had this sense that something was wrong, but I didn't have a language to articulate how I was feeling. I kind of had these gut feelings that there may have been some power issues going on as well, but I didn't have words for it. I just had this stirring that something was off. So my time in New York came to an end, found myself on a plane back to London, and I'd been staying with this lovely Filipino family and classic Asian hospitality. They're very into gift giving. And the father gifted me a book when I left. And it was The Life of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I'd never heard of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And I had no intention of reading the book. But my in-flight entertainment system was broken. And I couldn't move because it was a fully booked flight, so I had no choice but to give this book a go. And I was just completely arrested by what I read about this man. So we can go to the next slide. If you don't know Bonhoeffer, he was a German pastor during World War II. He ended up being one of the few pastors who refused to pledge allegiance to Hitler. He did a lot of amazing things. He set up a secret seminary called Finkenwald as like a resistance to the Nazi regime. Anyway, he phenomenal life. Go Google him. He's absolutely exceptional. But this book had big chunks of quotes from his writings, and later on I ended up buying a whole lot of books so that I could read his writings directly. But this was a long quote from his book, Discipleship. Sorry, kids, it is a long quote, but I'm going to read it because it kind of ruined my life. So I'm going to read it to you in case it ruins yours. So Kiwi's like losing it in the front row. It's fine. So he talks about cheap grace and costly grace. So he says this. He says, cheap grace is the preaching of forgiveness without requiring repentance. Baptism without church discipline, communion without confession, absolution without personal confession. Cheap grace is grace without discipleship, grace without the cross, grace without Jesus Christ, living and incarnate. Costly grace is the treasure hidden in the field. For the sake of it, a man will go and sell all that he has. It is the pearl of great price to buy, for which a merchant will sell all his goods. Next slide. Such grace is costly because it calls us to follow, and it is grace because it calls us to follow Jesus Christ. It is costly because it costs a man his life, and it is grace because it gives a man the only true life. It is costly because it condemns sin, and grace because it justifies the sinner. Above all, it is costly because it cost God the life of his Son. You were bought at a price, and what has cost God cannot be cheap for us. Above all, it is grace, because God did not reckon his Son too dear a price to pay for our life, but delivered him up for us. Costly grace is the incarnation of God. Wow. So finally, I had a language to articulate how I was feeling about this consumer Christianity that I had been raised in, and also what I believed to be the plight of the modern church. Side note, many years later, that church ended up being exposed for multiple scandals, and there's lots of documentaries about them. But that came long after my friends and I left. But ultimately, this changed the trajectory of my life. I became very obsessed with Bonhoeffer, and also just this weird thing that we call theology, and began to wonder whether I ought to study theology at university. I was 22 at this point, had no qualifications. And so I arrived back in London, and per chance, there's no such thing as chance, but per chance, my friend and I were doing a day trip in Cambridge, the beautiful city of Cambridge, a few hours outside of London. And while I was there, we can go to the next slide, I was on a punting tour. So you can see the little punts, the little boats there on the right. So we were on one of those boats, had a tour guide, and I just had this still small voice saying, "You could study here." And I was like, "Get behind me, Satan." There was no ways that could have come from me. First of all, like, this is gonna sound really bad, but I grew up genuinely believing I was stupid. I had undiagnosed dyslexia, and some of my cousins were bullies, and they used to tell me I was stupid, and I believed them. So there was absolutely no way, there was no chance on earth that that voice was me. It was either God or like a demon. And I did sort of entertain the idea that it could have been a demon, because everyone told me that if I studied theology, I'd lose my faith. So I was like, that was weird. That wasn't me. That's strange. I need psychological help. I heard a voice, and it was weird. But I prayed about it with my best friend. She prayed with me. And again, it was just that still small voice saying, "Sarah,